Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 119. This is Dave.
This is, I forget what my clever name was going to be this week, so I guess it's Ethan.
It's okay. That's all right, sir. Barry, you know, the summertime for Barry is really the time when he can get most of his traveling done, so that's why he's gone again yet this week. He will be back next week, so it's all good on that end of things. He's missed, but we have the talent here, right?
Yep.
See, I'm just setting you up like that. You know, seeing as you are the talent, I'm going to let you go ahead and start off with what you watched this week.
Alrighty, Dave. Well, the first thing I watched, now being 9 days ago, was a Christopher Nolan's 2002 film Insomnia. This is, of course, a remake of a Icelandic?
Swedish.
Yeah, okay.
It's all good.
Film. And it's a good movie.
That's what I keep hearing. I never got around to seeing it, but it's going to be on Blu-ray, so it'll be worth checking out then.
I just remember my dad saying he didn't like it, and I think it's just because of the kind of interesting artistic touches throughout the movie. He's probably like, what's this shit? So, it's an interesting, good film.
Cool.
It's interesting because I rewatched One Hour Photo recently, and I remember that those two movies came out like within like a few months of each other. It's like, man, Robin Williams, he was an interesting actor for a while. I mean, he did redeem himself with Old Dogs, but
yes, indeed.
Alrighty, next thing I watched was Hellbound: Hellraiser 2. This, of course, being the sequel to Hellraiser 1. And what can I say about this movie? I enjoyed it more than the first one.
Okay.
Because I feel like the human element in it is still a little lame. But I think the visuals, the very interesting visuals, kind of take even more of a center. They're more of the centerpiece of the movie. And it's... it coasts on them, but it's good because they're really genuinely cool. And there is some pretty gross stuff that surprised me. Like there's a scene where I'm trying to remember this guy, like he's imagining there's all these like maggots over him, and he's like cutting himself. He's like, get him off me, get him off me, and he's cutting himself and stuff. And it's pretty nasty. But
it's really spectacular.
Yeah, I liked it. Next, I watched Greenberg, which I have to say I think is my absolute favorite movie of the year so far.
Really?
Yeah, the thing about this movie that puzzles me, or at least the reception to it that puzzles me, is how even people who love the movie say how unlikable the character of Roger Greenberg is. In fact, I saw one review, a negative review, but it said that his character, in fact, was a monster. And I don't understand that at all. He's kind of a dick, but he's not a monster. Because the thing is, there's something in every Noah Baumbach film that I really relate to. In The Squid and the Whale, there was kind of the parental splitting up thing. In Margot at the Wedding, I kind of related to the character of Nicole Kidman's son. In Kicking and Screaming, I related to kind of the hanging out with friends thing. In this one, I related to the character of Roger Greenberg, because what makes him interesting as a person is because he's at this point in his life where he's spinning his wheels. He's 40 years old, and he's just frustrated with decisions he's made. Bad ones, and I relate to that. Even though I'm a lot younger than the character of Roger Greenberg, I've in my own life recently have felt a lot of frustration and anger with myself and decisions I've made, and I could really see where Greenberg was coming from. Yes, he's a bit of a dick at times, but still, it's an incredibly compelling and funny film, and I completely recommend it 100%. And there's this great scene where he's doing cocaine. And I know I saw Drew McWeeny on his Twitter yesterday. He mentioned that scene made him so uncomfortable he had to, like, stop watching the movie. But I found that scene, like, hilarious. Maybe just because it had Duran Duran in it, but...
Duran Duran plus coke equals comedy gold.
Yeah. So, check that shit out. Next, I watched Batman the movie.
The Adam West Burt Ward one?
Yes, and yes. You know, it's a pretty forgettable movie when you think about it, but I had a good time with it.
The part where the dolphin and the torpedo just makes me laugh so hard every time.
I know, it's a very funny movie, and it's interesting to think that we will never really get that Batman ever again. You know what I mean?
Oh no, not at all. That's so long gone. The closest we got, there was an episode of Batman in the animated series, which kind of did a tribute to all the old school Batman throughout the decades, and there's a scene of that. But I think that's the closest we're ever going to get to it again.
But it's like even the Joel Schumacher Batman movies, they like tried to be like that, but they were kind of stuck in this weird middle ground where they were goofy, but they kind of had to be like these 2-hour toy commercials at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it's a fun time. Yeah. It's goofy, but it's fun.
Yeah. Next, I chose to rewatch Michael Mann's Ali.
Really?
I remember seeing this in the theater when I was really young and thinking it was all right, I guess. And I had seen in December, Mr. Beaks of Ain't It Cool News, he did his top 100 of the decade. And he put it, I think it was like in the 80s, and he wrote how the thing is about this movie is that it isn't a paint-by-number sports biopic, but rather a tone poem about a man becoming a god. And that made me really interested in revisiting it, and I did. And I love that film. I think it's a great movie. And the thing about it is Michael Mann's visual storytelling in it is spectacular. Like the opening 10 minutes is this sequence where it's intercutting Sam Cooke singing performing with Ali, kind of scenes of him training and stuff and seeing things as a child. And that 10 minutes alone conveys so much that a movie like Ray takes like an hour to do. And of course, you know, which one got the Best Picture nomination? So it just shows how Michael Mann is always like, he's crapped on for showing and not telling, which is what you should be doing with a movie. But anyway, it's an excellent film. And there's this scene, like this typical Michael Mann scene where he's like late, where he's in Africa before the Rumble in the Jungle thing. And he's like running with all these kids and they're chanting Ali, Ali. And the music is like awesome. It's like, hoya, eone, eone. It's like this awesome scene. It gave me total goosebumps. So yeah, I'm totally glad I decided to revisit that. And let's see, next I watched Pink Flamingos for the first time ever.
Alright, so what was the verdict on that one?
Well, Dave, what I do for every movie I watch is I keep track of every movie I watch. I write down, I keep saved in a Word document, like the title, the director, the year, if it was the first time I watched or rewatch, and my score out of 4. And when thinking about what I should give this film, the score, I decided on a 3 out of 4, which is the equivalent of like a 7 out of 10. Because the thing is, even though I didn't really greatly enjoy the movie, it's kind of boring at times. The simple fact that this movie exists is pretty spectacular.
Fair enough.
The fact that John Waters got a drag queen to eat dog shit on camera is, I think, worthy of a 3 out of 4. That fact.
Okay, so the fact that Uwe Boll got Dave Foley to flash his junk, does that count too?
I don't think that's quite as...
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah,
not quite in the same way.
And I should mention I've watched the first 2 seasons over the last week or so of Breaking Bad, and this show just blows my mind.
I keep hearing how good it is. I just, the last thing I need to do is add another TV show.
I kind of felt the same way. In fact, I had actually seen the first 2 episodes on an airplane nearly a year ago, and for some reason I didn't think they were bad, but I just wasn't quite food for, I don't know, for it on an airplane, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just decided, okay, you know what, I really need to just give this another shot, and I did, and I am so glad, because this show is just so freaking compelling.
Is that the show with Bryan Cranston?
Yeah, he's amazing, and the supporting character of Jesse amazing as well. And this show is almost at times as like you'd think it'd be kind of gritty, like crime drama, rah rah rah. But the thing is, this show almost at times is as ridiculous as 24. But the thing is, it never, you never are taken out of it ever for 1 second, because it is just so compelling. So yeah, I just had to mention that because I freaking love that show. So
cool. Right on. Is that it for you, sir?
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot. What am I saying? Is that it? You know, yeah. Just making sure you missed. Yeah, I'm not cutting you off. Because you watched a heck of a lot more than I did, but I'll go through it. This past week, I got the Works of Michel Gondry DVD, director series, and went through it again. And it is so good. Like, the guy, I love Michel Gondry with every single thing, more and more every time I see something that he's done. Just because he's got such a creative eye, and the way he makes film is just... I like to think that he's actually a romantic filmmaker, not that, you know, like that love story sappy stuff, but he just loves film so much that it comes through in every single thing that he shoots.
Did you watch, because I remember seeing that DVD in a film class like a few years ago. It was like a short film he made about, like, it was a kid writing a letter to a girl he had a crush on or
that
something.
That was one of them, yes.
Yeah, I remember really enjoying that.
Yeah, it has a lot of his music videos. It's got a story that spans across both discs. I think it's called I've Always Been 12. That's kind of talking about his life and stuff. That's just really good. It's just, the man loves the medium of cinema and of film and just cinema in general. I just love everything the man does. I finally got to chalk off Bullet off of my list of shame.
I actually bought that for like $8 like in January, and I still haven't watched it.
I bought it for $10 about 3 or 4 months ago, and I just finally got around to watching it. Watch it, sir. Steve McQueen exudes cool in ways that no one else ever could.
There is.
I'll go for it.
You know, I don't even have to say who.
Joshua Jackson.
You're lying. I never hit you.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Tommy Wiseau does take the role, I guess. But what I love about Bullet is, yes, it does have an incredibly compelling car chase in it that within 30 seconds passes the same green bug 3 times. But the chase is so well done, you just don't care. That's just how good it is. And add in the fact it actually has a very good, crime police procedural story behind it. And it's just a good movie. It's such a good time. Like, I watched it with my father-in-law, and we had to take a break for dinner, and we're going to, you know, have family time. He's like, no, we need to go finish the movie because we had 10 minutes left. And it was it's just so good on every level. There's no weak performance in the film. It's just good. Yeah.
Did you watch, because I know in the DVD there's like this, I think it's an hour and a half long documentary on film editing.
I haven't watched any of the extras yet. There's a ton.
Oh, because I've heard that's awesome. I like bought the DVD just for that. So
yeah. I was like, the Blu-ray for $10. Bring it. I'm so there. Absolutely. Then this morning, because we'll get to it in releases, but day and date release with the DVD and Blu-ray, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is available on Netflix, which kind of surprised me. So I was like, you know, I have an extra day off. I'm going to start my day watching the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Because, you know, it's going to be a nice, relaxing movie that's just, you know, fun for the whole family. Let grandma and the kids watch it. This is so not the case with this movie, but it is such an astoundingly good film. I know Harry Knowles brought it up in his DVD column that came out today. But it really does bring, like, the thriller and procedural together in a good way. Like it really is a thriller of a film. It's a good mystery. It's just good all over the place again. I'm really kind of still processing the film. It's a very, very rough movie. There's a rape scene that is not super long, but it's pretty rough. They don't really show anything, but they show the after effects of her, and I'll just say it has one of the greatest paybacks for something like that in cinema history. It outdid what Hard Candy does, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm.
I'm so conflicted about this because it's like, should I read the book, watch the movie, wait for the remake, do all three? I'm like, I'm really conflicted here.
The movie's well worth watching. If you're any kind of movie lover, you have to see it.
Well, I just like to be able to read the book and then watch the remake with an audience. Be like, they cut that out.
Exactly. So. And that's why I'd like to watch a movie before reading a book, so that I can go back and read the book and be like, oh, okay, they fleshed this and that out a bit more. Because even at 2.5 hours long. I'm sure it still didn't get everything from the book, but it did a very good job. It had incredibly compelling characters. The girl with the dragon tattoo was absolutely mesmerizing every second she was on the screen. I just really, it's a movie you really can't say that you enjoyed because it's such dark material, but it's just so well done. You can't help but like it and really admire it. The thing that really caught me was that, you know what? I can see David Fincher doing an adaptation of this material and it will be great. As much as I'm against doing remakes, especially something that's already good, you know, I can't really bet against Fincher.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if it was like Sean Levy or Brett Ratner directing a remake, I'd probably just read the book or watch the original. But I just, because it's Fincher, it's like almost, I just want to be able to go into a new David Fincher movie, you know, just fresh, not knowing what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. In some ways, I kind of, I don't know. I think this movie stands well enough on its own, and Fincher is absolutely a competent enough filmmaker to make anything that he makes stand on its own. So I can see these two films existing in the same place and still being very good and not necessarily detracting from each other. Yeah.
Well,
watch
all
it.
Right.
Yeah. And then see, let's do a little bit of TV to wrap it up. Sanctuary season 2, we're still watching it. I figured out what my problem with the show is. Remember Ang Lee's Hulk, how they did that comic panel?
All I remember is the Hulk dogs.
Okay. You don't remember the scenes where they had like the same scene from three different angles on the same shot, kind of like they were comic book panels?
No, I do remember that. Okay. I'm just being an ass.
Not you. Never. Unfortunately, Sanctuary has discovered this whole theory as well, and there was an episode where seriously, in a 42-minute episode, they did it 7 times. And they tend to do it quite a bit during the show, and I hate that they do it because it's such a good, it's a solid show otherwise, and it just kind of really jumps out at you every time it happens. It's almost going to be like a drinking game while you're watching the show. So I just had to get that off my chest, and if they do a season 3, I'm sure they are, they need to not do that anymore because it's driving me up the flipping wall. And then finally, I'm so happy Futurama's back. Did you watch this week's episode, sir?
I haven't seen any of the new episodes yet. Sorry.
That's okay. Oh, goodness. All I will say is that it has one of the greatest riffs on the iPhone and Apple that you could make. It's almost bordering on South Park levels of goodness as far as social satire goes.
Having just signed up for updates for when we'll get the iPhone 4G, I'm sure I'd enjoy this.
Oh, right? You will. Oh, you will, especially the punchline at the end. However, it's not the same show it was before they had the layoff. I don't know if it's because Comedy Central's like, hey, put in more poop jokes or whatever. But there is a joke involving Susan Boyle that is almost Family Guy-ish.
Mm.
Which, you know, I even as someone who doesn't like Family Guy, you know, I will grant that, you know, that humor has a place. And, you know, it's Family Guy's successful for a reason. I just don't think that they needed to have that in Futurama. And then there's a joke involving a two-headed goat that one end vomited, you know, vomit, and the other end vomited diarrhea. And they fill up a pool. And I'm just not going to go into what that entails. but the iPhone gag is absolutely hilarious, which is the majority of the episode. It's good stuff. So that's what I've watched. Let's go ahead and move into what hit theaters this past week. Boy, were there some winners. First off, we had, of course, Twilight Saga Eclipse. And seriously, when we were going into this last week, would you have ever thought in a million years we'd be saying that the Eclipse was better than The Last Airbender, from what everyone's saying?
Not really.
Like this, I haven't seen Cop Out yet. I will be seeing it here pretty soon, but I will probably never give Kevin Smith too much crap about it, even if I hate it, because the man's trying something new. He's getting outside of his comfort zone and trying something new. Something that he didn't write. Well, Shyamalan's doing the same thing, but it sounds like, oh, wait, no, he did write the script, and he did direct it, and it sounds like it's just a gigantic turd.
Well, I should mention, I remember last week I said I'd take one for the team and see it.
Uh-huh. Did you follow through?
Well, now, I remember I made a joke saying, I'm probably going to look at the tomato meter on, like, Wednesday and it's going to be at, like, 5%. And when I said that, I was joking, and I figured it'd probably be, like, 40-50. But then, no, I go on Rotten Tomatoes on Wednesday. It is literally at 5%. And I check theater listings, and it's only playing in 3D. And I remember that this is a film aimed at children. So my ass stayed at home.
Okay, so you didn't follow through.
Sorry.
That's okay. You know, because it's just if it'd been in 2D, would you have gone?
Maybe.
Okay. I could understand that because, you know, the 2D, 3D thing, I'm so a 3D hater for the most part, unless it's really done well. And it sounds like this was so not the case with this one. Did you see the YouTube clip? Was it Reels Channel? Did it, you know, a man on the street? Let's get all the fans together and see what they thought. And everyone's like, it sucked. That was kind of special. Like, at one point, the guy's like, look, we have this giant line of people. And I'll just ask, did anyone actually like this movie? And everyone was, like, flipping off the camera and booing. And, yeah, it was special. So go see the A-Team again. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Because that movie needs to make more money. Let's see. DVD coming out this week. The aforementioned The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo coming on DVD and Blu-ray. We also have A Single Man, Brooklyn's Finest, Jason and the Argonauts, the Harryhausen classic coming to Blu-ray, the complete series of Life on Mars, the UK edition. And I'm a little sad about this because Billy Flynn over at GeekRadioDaily.com, just because I have to have that ready, he stole my movie, even though we haven't talked about it. But I'm just kind of sad. It's okay. It's sometimes you have a movie come up that's just too easy to pass up. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. So this week on DVD, you can own the film that features in the near future as fear of terrorism escalates, privacy is a luxury of the past. Now in people's homes, on the streets, in the workplace, everyone is constantly being watched by mobile robotic cameras known as iBorgs. But are the cameras just watching, or are they up to something else? As an increasing number of people die in bizarre ways, federal agent Gunnar Reynolds is determined to find out after he realizes that a camera has recorded an event much differently than he recalls. That's right, you can own Adrian Paul. Wow. Dude's fallen even from flipping a Highlander to iBorgs. Oh, and Danny Trejo's in it, too. I almost missed that.
Sounds like a commentary on the Bush administration to me.
There you go. Well, you know, you know, I'm going to leave the politics alone because both sides are kind of okay. Let's move on to news, sir. What have you got? I've got like almost nothing.
Let's just do the big one first. Andrew Garfield will be the new Spider-Man. A 27-year-old British kid will be playing a 16-year-old American superhero.
Is this the 80s? Because I thought the whole thing of having kids in their late 20s playing teenagers was mostly an 80s thing.
You know, there's someone whose lifelong dream has been to play Spider-Man, and right now where I'm at pretty much a perfect age to do it, to have this opportunity taken away by a 27-year-old British kid, it's a little...
It just hurts.
A bit, but I will say, the only movie I've seen this guy in was Dr. Parnassus, and I thought he was good in it.
Yeah.
He was, you know, the young guy who was kind of jealous of Heath Ledger.
Okay. He was decent in that. Okay.
Huh. And he's in this movie called Boy A, which I've been meaning to see for a while, which I've heard he's very good in. And I know he's in The Social Network, so.
Okay. So he's got a bit of a resume already.
Yeah, we'll be seeing more of him, I think.
So we're not in for Robert Pattinson part two.
So we're not what?
We're not in for Robert Pattinson part two. Okay, good.
No. Oh.
sorry. Didn't need to do that to you.
Next piece of news. Judd Apatow will be producing a new Pee Wee Herman film.
So, what do you think about this? Do you think now in the context of the other Pee Wee movies, how Apatow do you think this is going to get?
I don't think, beyond probably like Paul Rudd and Craig Robinson cameos, I don't think it'll be too... Like, I can't see, like, F-bombs or anything in it.
I could see this more as Apatow stepping up to the plate saying, you know what, the world needs another Pee-wee movie.
Exactly.
So, yeah, totally get that. I'm curious to see it. You know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was definitely better than Big Top Pee-wee as far as I was concerned. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll get another TV show.
Isn't he like nearly 60?
Paul Rubens?
Yeah, I think he's really old.
I don't know if he's that old.
Look it up.
I'm going to look it up. Keep going with your news, sir.
And last news story I have, at least, is that the first trailer for Let Me In, the remake of Let the Right One In, has come out.
What do you think?
It doesn't look bad, but it just looks kind of pointless. Like, it just looks visually like the exact same movie.
Yeah, it kind of does. Holy crap, he is old. He's like 58.
See? When you think, is it kind of creepy that a 60-year-old man is playing a man-child? Like, is that okay when you're still in your 30s, or when you're 60, is that, like, getting a little too,
I just don't
what
know.
What do you think?
I don't know. That's just a little bit jarring, because did you see the iPad commercial that he did for Funny or Die?
Yeah, like, and you can see the wrinkles in him, but...
A bit, but he doesn't look that old at all. He's aged quite well, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Wow, all right. Let's see, the only news I've got two things. We have the complete non-event, that is the Harry Potter 7 trailer. I mean, poster, poster.
Oh, the trailer looked good.
The trailer looks pretty good, yeah, but the poster's like, oh, okay, it's Harry Potter, okay. No, the
movie. Poster.
Yeah, the trailer looks good. And then apparently we have a release date for the Daft Punk Tron Legacy soundtrack, which will be November 23rd.
Bomp, bomp.
I hope they get Michel Gondry to do some one of the videos, because Michel Gondry doing Daft Punk Tron would just destroy the world from the awesome, I think.
I just think it's interesting that Thomas Bangalter, who's one half of Daft Punk, he's doing the sound, he did the sound editing and the music for Enter the Void. It's pretty interesting that you have like one guy who's doing such like opposite ends of the spectrum, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's very interesting. Huh. All right. Well, wow, we're just kind of cruising through this episode. I think it's because we didn't have like a 3-week gap, so we aren't spending an hour just getting through what we watched.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. So let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be back to talk about one of the more interesting actors working today. I'll just leave it at that. Well, you've seen the title. You know who it is. We'll be back.
Get your geek on in a Geek Label t-shirt. Shirts for gamers, geeks, and tech heads. If you like games, movies, computers, or comics, we've got your new t-shirt waiting for you. Let Geek Label change your life. You can go from...
Oh, hell no.
To...
Oh, hell yeah.
In the blink of a t-shirt. And the best part, every design is available in all kinds of silky, smooth colors and shirt styles. Short and long sleeve tees, and for the ladies, ringers, raglans, ladies tees, even spaghetti strap tees. Feel fly, walk tall, be irresistible to the opposite sex. Died, even we can't do all that. Hundreds of designs and they're all off the hook, yo. You pick the style, you pick the color, we do the rest, cause that's how we roll. Get your geek on at Geek Label. That's one word, geeklabel.com.
Hi, this is Nichelle Nichols. And when I'm in this quadrant, I tune in to Screen Geeks Radio. You should too.
And we are back. Seriously, if you want a $5 geeky t-shirt, go to geeklabel.com while you can. Yeah, because they're orphaned. They need homes. It's all good. So Barry gave us the idea to do this episode this week. And do you want to introduce this one, Ethan? Because this is a very special one, and you seemed incredibly prepared for it.
Yeah. This week on the Screen Geeks podcast, we will be talking about Willem Dafoe. One of the world's most well-known character actors.
He's one of the most unique actors we have working today. He's fearless. I think he defines fearless pretty much.
And he's one of those actors who can pretty much be in any movie.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, it's... in some ways, I think you can make a comparison to James Spader just in that, you know, neither of them are afraid to take on a difficult role. But Dafoe has run the entire gamut, going to kid stuff all the way to, you know, Antichrist and all the other more... Fringe films? Is that the way you put it? Or how would you explain some of the stuff he's done?
Well, Fringe, I guess, is a good term. But, well, let's start like in the 80s.
Okay.
I'm just looking at my list here. And I'll list off all the 80s movies I've seen from him. The Hunger, I actually don't remember him being in that, but, you know. To Live and Die in L.A., which I do very well remember him in. And I think that was kind of like his first big villain role, and he's a very... That's showing off the later sides he'd show off, you know, like Spider-Man or something, but... He's in that, like, I remember there's this scene where he, like, he's going into, like, a club, and he's, like, making out with this person. First, you, like, think it's a guy, and of course, in, like, 1985, this would be, like, super taboo.
Oh, absolutely.
But then, you know, but then he, like, takes off a thing, and it's actually a chick dressed up, but still, you know, that's a risky choice to do for an actor right off at the start of your career, so just shows what balls that guy has.
Absolutely. So what's the first movie you saw of his that you remember him in?
Oh boy, I'm gonna have to say Speed 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd have to go Flight of the Intruder of all things. Did you ever see that one?
No.
It's actually a pretty good Vietnam movie. It almost takes the story of Iron Eagle or something, but makes it a bit more realistic feeling. And he was really good and solid in it. That's the thing. I don't think he's had put in a bad performance yet.
And say, speaking of Vietnam, he had two roles in two Oliver Stone Vietnam films: Platoon, which he was nominated for an Oscar for, and Born on the 4th of July. And it's interesting, actually, looking at those two roles; they're pretty different, even in not so different films. Because in Platoon, he's like the kind of hippie pacifist sergeant, and in Born on the 4th of July, he's like this burnt out paraplegic Vietnam veteran. So, two ends of the coin, man.
Or sides.
Shut up.
Actually, with him, the ends actually kind of works. You know, and then he's that's the cool thing is, you know, usually you can see someone when they start playing a military type character, they could be typecast as that type of thing. Like, you know, he played John Clark in Clear and Present Danger. And at the time, I was a humongous Tom Clancy fan. I've read probably the first 6 or 7 books of that Jack Ryan series. And John Clark is like a 6'8" Italian guy with black hair. Not what you think when you see Willem Dafoe. But he sold you on that part, and he brought it. He's like, you know what, I don't care what I'm going to be this character, I'm going to inhabit this character. And that's something that he brings to pretty much every role that he's done.
And I'm looking next in the list, and I see David Lynch's Wild at Heart, which he has some very memorable scenes. I'm going to have to use the F word here to recreate one, so get ready. But there's this... Or should I just substitute the F word with another F word?
Okay, that works.
Well, there's a scene where he grabs Laura Dern, and just for like probably a minute straight, he's just like, "Frick me, frick me. Frick me, frick me, frick me, frick me, frick me." And it's like one of the creepiest scenes I've ever seen in any movie ever. And in that movie, too, he's like, plays maybe one of the ugliest, like, on-screen characters ever. And he's not, like, a typically handsome man, but I'd still say in, like, Platoon or something, some chicks wanting to jump his bones.
Fair enough.
That's just another risk he takes.
Indeed, indeed. And sometimes he takes a risk with Madonna. Did you actually sit through that?
Body of Evidence?
Yeah.
I've heard enough about it.
You've heard enough, believe me. Yeah. Again, you know, he's not a bad actor, but that was a stinker of a movie.
Speaking of stinkers, the aforementioned Speed 2. I just, what I remember about him in this movie is that somehow leeches made him live.
I've never seen it. I've avoided that one successfully.
It's just, I remember there's this thing, like, he was like this, I forget if he was a scientist or something, but, like, he's like, he put, like, leeches on him, and he's like, "The leeches help me live," or something, so.
Right,
he's shameless.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we want to talk? We have to go here. Let's just get to Boondock Saints.
Oh, boy, the biggest stinker on this list.
Yeah,
but an entertaining Dafoe performance, I will say that he is the only redeeming factor of that film.
Billy Connolly was kind of funny, but yes, by far, like, if you're looking for someone who's like, "Hey, this is a reason to watch this movie," just he plays insane so well in this movie. I mean, what's funny is when he makes his turn, we'll just say, you're taken by surprise, but you look back at the story and you're like, well, the hints are actually there. But when he actually turns, it made my jaw drop and my brain break.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, you know, I don't know how much more you can say without really spoiling what that twist is. And for people who haven't seen it, it is worth watching just for that reason.
Just yeah. YouTube it. Don't sit through the actual movie.
Fair enough.
Next on this list, I noticed American Psycho, which he played more of a straight man role in. So it's showing that he wasn't just completely typecast as people who use leeches to help him survive.
Exactly. Yes. Because that's a pretty, you know, tight niche to fit into.
Yeah, and being the straight man in such a wild movie is a bold turn in its own way.
But it makes complete sense because he does go for such bug nuts crazy characters that in a movie full of bug nuts crazy characters, he'd be the one sane one. It's brilliant casting, and it makes perfect sense.
And I remember this scene where he's talking to Patrick Bateman, and he's like, I just bought the new Huey Lewis and the News album. I'm like... Great scene.
totally. Can we go to Shadow of the Vampire?
Yes, because I actually just watched it this week in preparation for this.
This is such... I could see this as being a defining role for him in some ways down the road.
Frankly, I was pretty blown away by his performance in this movie.
Yeah, he's so creepy, yet kind of has a semblance of innocence that's still very sinister.
I thought he was hilarious in it, too.
Oh, he was. He was freaking hilarious. Like, when he keeps eating stuff, I'll just leave it at that.
And that scene where Udo Kier and the other guy, they're talking, and then he just comes and starts drinking. Like, he's like, I read Dracula, and it's made me sad. Like, yeah, great scene.
Like, how many of the scenes... usually, if I'm about to say this, it's mocking someone's performance or mocking a film completely. But how often would he have a deadpan moment, especially if they found him eating stuff, where you could just kind of hear the sitcom, wah, wah, and it would legitimately get a laugh?
Yeah, he faces the challenge of being compared to Max Schreck's actual performance as Nosferatu, and he does kind of have to ape the performance, but I think he completely made it his own too.
Absolutely. I love the ending.
Yeah, and I was just gonna say, how many actors? I guess there's one we're gonna have to leave off the list because I think neither you or I have seen it. The Last Temptation of Christ. How many actors out there that have played both Nosferatu and Jesus?
I love this quote that he has about Last Temptation of Christ. To this day, I can't believe I was so brazen to think I could pull off the Jesus role. Like, that's what I love about him. He's like, you know, it's not like he's saying, I've got this. He's like, you know, I'm going to try to push myself and see if I can do something new.
Yeah, and, you know.
I really respect the guy. I need to see that film at some point.
Yeah, I want to too. Well, I'm a big Scorsese guy, but that's one of the few I have not seen. So
I'll let you keep going, sir, because now we're hitting a bit of a lull in things I've seen from him outside of, you know, Spider-Man movies and Parachute Tem.
Well, I guess we should mention Spider-Man next because you just said it. But I remember him being a very memorable villain in this, and I think he was so memorable. Of course, they brought him back for two more.
Yes, he made a Power Ranger outfit. Villain actually scary.
Yeah, and his presence too in the sequels, even though it's kind of cheesy, but him being, you know, in the mirror saying, kill the Spider-Man.
Well, it was good in the second one. The third one was kind of...
It's like, yeah, too much. But, again, and that's just, again, showing how he can fit into, like, this, you know, huge $200 million comic book movie he can just fit into perfectly.
And he can go do Antichrist.
Yeah. And next, Finding Nemo, he had a voice role in. I remember him being very entertaining in that, too.
Yeah, it's just he's got such a distinctive voice, too. Like, you can tell every time he's doing this stuff, like, even if it's the most twisted stuff, he's just having a blast.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like the old thing when you hear people talking on a phone, they're like, you know, you can hear when someone smiles. You can just tell in his performance just how much fun he's having with everything he does.
Yeah. Next on the list, I noticed Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which, to be honest, I don't really remember him being in. But,
neither do I.
But, you know, it's good that he was in it.
Absolutely.
Next, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
I hate to admit it, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, that's too. But he's very funny in it. Like, I think he's maybe the funniest character in the movie as Klaus, the German guy. And there's this scene where Team Zissou is doing a rescue mission and they're picking everybody. And, like, he's like, yeah, forget about me. And it's, like, so funny and stuff. And, it's just another example of him being this total funny scene stealer.
Absolutely.
Not always just a creep. And next on my list, I have The Aviator, which I kind of vaguely remember him being in. But I guess he was really just part of a greater ensemble, which, again, is a testament to his talent that he's willing to sink into an ensemble cast.
Yeah. Some people would be like, oh, that's below me. No, if it's a good part, it's a good part.
Yeah. Next on my list, I noticed Inside Man, which I vaguely remember him in. And again, it's like kind of the American Psycho role, where it's him being kind of the straight man. And you're standing there, you're watching him play a straight arrow policeman, like detective, and you're thinking, you know, this isn't the typical Willem Dafoe. He's not doing too much, but it is amazing that this guy on screen right now also was in Shadow of the Vampire and Wild at Heart and Platoon.
Yes.
And next, Antichrist, yes.
Which I have not finished. I'm only about 45 minutes into it.
But he, again, incredibly brave.
Yes. I can see why he would require a stunt man at the beginning.
And towards the end, he definitely, I don't know quite what the process was there, but.
Okay.
Won't spoil that.
Okay.
Last I have Fantastic Mr. Fox, which he's in it just for a little bit, but his performance as the rat is like maybe my favorite part of that movie. You know, just sada, apple sada.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm so ashamed to say it. I know. Is it my Netflix queue? I need to check real quick. Oh, I hope it is. If not, I'll add it right away.
Put it number one!
I know. I've actually got one more besides that.
Okay.
Did you see Daybreakers?
I didn't see the entire thing.
Okay. He's a good chunk of why that movie works. Because, again, he's such a goofball. He's kind of, instead of, you know, he gets to play the hero in many ways. He's the vampire who found out how to get around vampirism, and you can tell there's a screw loose, but it works so well. And that's the key, is that he finds these roles where he can kind of, you know, take risks and kind of go out on a limb a bit, but make it work within the context of what he can do.
And I didn't see the entire thing, but he was kind of like in action hero mode in it too.
He was, which is, you know, again, another twist for things that he did.
I think it's one of the few movies he's been in where he's had a beard.
That's true. That's true. Didn't even think about that. But this we're going to start doing some of these episodes once in a while, just because, you know, we do directors and that's great and all. But there are actors out there who just, they don't get enough credit for what they do. And this man has done amazing work, as far as I'm concerned.
And he should be a sex symbol by now.
Kind of in that James Spader kind of way, right?
Yeah.
There you go. I'm sure he will be. He's unique enough looking that, you know, like you said, he's not ugly, but he just has a very striking look about him. Yeah. The man does good work. I think he's underappreciated overall.
Yeah.
So next week, we are going to start up. We're going to experiment a little bit with a director's series. I'm not going to ruin who it is, but it should be interesting. We're going to do an episode with better-known films and less than an episode with lesser-known films. So it should be a good time. But until then, we've got some stuff to talk about what's coming out this next week. This week, this coming Friday, two theaters, we have got Steve Carell, Jason Segel, and other people in Despicable Me. We have got Lawrence Fishburne, Adrian Brody, and who else in Predators?
Danny Trejo, Topher Grace, guy who played Shane on The Shield.
Danny Trejo, how do you miss a man like Danny Trejo? Dang it. And then in limited release, we have got The Kids Are All Right, The Girl Who Played With Fire, which I believe is the sequel to Girls with Dragon Tattoo. I've heard it's not quite as good, but still worth checking out. And then finally, Wreck 2 is coming. That's the one I really want to see on this list.
Yeah.
Well, I want to see The Girl Who Played With Fire, too, but Wreck 2 is coming to Denver next weekend, so I'll be seeing it to talk about, and I'll talk about it next week on the episode. Two episodes from now. Goodness. See, we're recording late, so sorry about that, folks. Coming to DVD next week, we've got The Bounty Hunter.
Great.
Yeah, okay. Mystery Science Theater 3000, Volume 18, featuring The Lost Continent, Crash of the Moons, The Beast of Yucca Flats, and Jack Frost, which should, you know, it's MST. How do you go wrong? It's always a good time. Then we've got Chloe, which just looks so... I read the synopsis, and it's got Julianne Moore, Liam Neeson, and, oh, shoot, what's her name from...
Amanda Hug and Kiss?
Yes, Amanda Seyfried. I know her from Veronica Mars, so, but this just seems like such a stupid concept for a movie, like, so out of touch with reality.
Have you seen the scene from the movie that has popped up online?
No. What is the scene?
It is the film's two female leads engaged in, how should I put this?
Intimacy.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, wow, all right. So it's everything we're hoping for with Black Swan? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, see, I'm actually expecting a good movie with Black Swan. All right, then also coming up, we've got Greenberg, the aforementioned, as well as Insomnia coming to Blu-ray, as well In Bruges is coming to Blu-ray finally as well. That should make many people happy. Many people have been psyched about that. We've also got an odd film starring Jonathan Pryce and Tom Baker called Selling Hitler, which just, it looks odd. Look it up on Amazon. It just sounds interesting enough to bring up. Essentially, you know, this guy's on a hunt for Hitler's lost manuscript and finds a guy selling copies that he's homemaking out of his house. And it's apparently a giant con job. Then finally, Steve Buscemi and Sarah Silverman in St. John of Las Vegas. I saw this back at the Denver Film Fest, and it's a quirky, unique little fun movie. I mean, it's Steve Buscemi in the lead role. That's really all you need to know as an insurance investigator. So yeah, good times and all. Is there anything you want to add at all or anything before we close this bad boy out?
Oh crap! I had something prepared. I was like, I'm going to mention this. I can mention this. Right now, I'm working on my top 100 list, which I will post on my blog probably in a few weeks. I figured since I'm going to film school starting in September, I should I'd create a top 100 pre-film school, and then maybe 4 years from now when I'm graduated, I'll make a top 100 post-film school just to see how it has altered my brain.
Very so interesting. I know. I need to tweak my top 10 just since doing the podcasting thing.
Yeah. With
how many movies I've seen and everything. I do have a few things to bring up. First of all, there's a movie that came out a few weeks ago, and we ended up missing the episode, but there's a movie that's out on DVD and on demand called The Flying Scissors. I forgot, did you get a chance to watch this?
I have the screener actually sitting in my room right now. I think I can probably see it if I bend over a bit.
Okay, but you didn't watch it yet.
No.
Okay, well, I'll bring it up. It's a fun little independent comedy about the World Rock, Paper, Scissors Championship. It's kind of done in a mockumentary style, kind of like The Office. It's not entirely successful, but it's a fun movie. It's definitely got an interesting ending. It was a pretty daring ending for how they decided to end that. There's some really good character development in it, which was really surprised me for this kind of thing. And it's definitely worth checking out. I don't know if it's on Netflix yet, but I know you can definitely pick it up on Amazon, and it's on various streaming sites. It's worth checking out. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've missed. Session 9's on Netflix, and you need to watch it if you haven't seen Session 9, because holy crap, that's a good movie. I think that's it.
Yeah.
All right.
Is there something I should mention? Not that I can think of. Maybe next week.
It's all good. We'll be back at normal time next week. If you want to send us an email, you absolutely can. Podcast Ethan, Dave, or Barry, all at screengeeks.com. And yes, we do finally have voicemail set up again. If you'd like to call us, you can give us a call at 719-358-2675. Yes, that's right. Our voicemail number is 719-358-BORK. I'm tempted to do a Swedish chef thing with that.
I'll just do it.
I'll have something ready next week. I don't know. But next week we've got some fun lined up. Barry will be back, and we'll be talking about Despicable Me and all kinds of fun stuff. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Giovanni Ribisi's less talented brother, Brian Ribisi.
Wow. Well done, sir.